I do remember my parents had been calling me. And, in fact, that is what the deer said, your parents are calling you. And I said, well, you know, that's all right. I didn't have a sense of lapse time. But my parents said that I had been gone a while, but a while was probably no more than an hour. It might have only been a half hour, it's that order of magnitude. But that's why he had to go, because my parents were calling me. Whispers. Virginia, Virginia. Well, you've got to go back and have your picnic. And I said, there's no rush. So it's as though when they really started to look for me, that's when he had to leave. After a pause, I don't think it was a deer. I mean, the mental image of a deer is there, the visual image, but the inner experience of it is not of a deer but of a person. Very definitely a human kind of a person. I mean, I really like animals like my cat, and one know the difference between the person, heart of a cat, and the person, heart of a people, and it was a person, people kind of thing. We were talking about, I don't know what, about how beautiful something was. The woods or something like that. And yet when I got back, I had this blood on my blouse. Just a little. Just where you would if you had a nosebleed. At the count of three, let yourself go back to that period between leaving the deer and discovering the blood on your blouse. Whispers, okay, one, two, three. Yes. My parents were calling me, and the deer, I was looking for the deer. It was as though I was looking at him and talking to him, and he said he had to go away, and I heard my parents call, and I turned my head to answer them to say something like, I'm here. And when I turned back, the deer was gone. But I didn't want to go back there because I was busy looking for the deer. I didn't think he was gone. He just disappeared all of a sudden. It wasn't like he'd walked away. But we were in the woods, so it was as though, well, maybe he stepped behind the trees or something. I mean, I didn't have the sensation that it was, snaps her fingers, instantly gone, except that it was in the time that I turned my head to talk to my parents. You know, I'm here. In that period of time. The deer was gone, and I didn't know whether it had run away into the woods, but it was just completely gone. And so I spent a little while walking in that direction as though to follow it and find it, because I didn't want to leave it. And at 11 the time they were calling me, so finally I went bouncing back, and all I could talk about was the deer. And they'd say, where have you been? And I said, in the woods with Roger, her brother. Well, Roger's been here. He was looking for you. Well, I went down there with him, and I was with him the whole time. Well, he just came back. He couldn't find you. Well, I was right down there, you know, which wasn't very far. I was right down there, and he must have wandered off and got himself confused. One was dismissing him as having lost me, and so they didn't pursue that anymore. There I was, and I had just come back from the since I answered them, but all I could talk about was the deer, and they were the ones, one guess it was my mother, who said, you have blood on your shirt. And I looked, and it was fresh. It was fresh, fresh blood. It was fresh as when you just cut yourself. It hadn't begun to dry at all, and so I looked on my hands, and no blood, and my neck, felt my face, no blood, and felt my nose, if I had a bloody nose. No bloody nose. And all of that is on film. I haven't seen it since we talked. But I have that on film because my father was filming Al one of us at the picnic. And so that distracted me, and I was all of a sudden preoccupied, like, where did the blood come from? I never made the connection between that incident and the other one until I called my mother to ask about the scar, and she didn't remember much about that except that it happened and that we never figured out what it was from, and she was the one who reminded me about the unexpected blood she remembered from this other incident. And having it right on my blouse, my white blouse. I remember being very frustrated. They had been hollering at me. I mean, I remember thinking if they hadn't been hollering at me, I would still have been talking to the deer, and that upset me a lot. So I remember being grumpy about that. It's as though somehow I lost track of the deer because of that, and feeling very frustrated and disappointed, and also as though I had lost something. Like if you're in a carnival with a friend and there are so many people and you turn to look at something and you let go of somebody's hand and it isn't as though they're permanently lost, but you're separated and you know that there isn't any way that you can find each other for a while. It's a loss like being sort of yanked out of that transaction before it was over with. I have a big blank about what happened before that. Because the part one remember with that deer was the end of the conversation. But I remember it wasn't just I saw the deer that was pretty, it was the ending of a transaction. It's as though there's a big blank spot in the middle, and I don't know why that's blank. Because the ending is so vivid. Let me think about that. Why would I have a blank? I guess they had to give me, you know, a forget it thing, because of my parents and family and stuff. AC. Amnesia. VH. Yes. Because if I told them I was doing this, that, or the other thing, it was still at that age that they would have, of course, they wouldn't necessarily believe me. It's interesting when I was talking with my parents about it a couple of weeks ago, my mother had all kinds of other possibilities of how I had cut myself which were the ones she had had at the time, none of which made any more sense now than they had then. But my father had absolutely no doubt at all that it might have been exactly the way I remembered it. He had a very high, well so did my mother, a very high confidence in our veracity. I mean we weren't lying kids and we didn't make up stories. But I think it, the amnesia, BH, was for our protection just in general. I probably would have told my friends in school and they probably would have given me a hard time. At this point, Virginia goes into a fairly long digression on the subject of her need to keep this experience, and obviously her identity, confidential. It seemed to me at the time to exemplify the struggle between an externally induced block and Virginia's desire to remember. VH, it's as though I have that kind of block about it and, how can I give my mind away around the corner of the block? AC, amnesia can be lifted. So let yourself just relax. Stay very, very comfortable, protected, as you sink deeper and deeper into this marvelous, protected relaxation. You will remember things which lie underneath which you have forgotten because you were told to forget. They're going to emerge now. You're an adult. You're among friends who will accept your experience. You may have been given amnesia for a time because you were a child, a young girl who didn't know quite what to do with that information. Now you're an adult. You can lift your forgetfulness and look beneath and see what you're forgetting. Forgetting is a defense. We all use it for things that we don't know what to do with, or are uncomfortable with. We forget, but it is not permanent. It can be recalled. Now you are going to let yourself recall what is underneath. Another fairly long digression ensues before Virginia finally breaks through her block. VH, I'm walking through the woods. There's a very bright light. There's a ship, just like they have in the movies. It's round. It's top, shaped roughly, but I can't tell exactly. There's so much light you can't really see clearly. It's interesting. Here I go again with this feeling in my eyes. They're getting very tender. A very bright light. Pretty. Bright light. There was some pink in it. And blue. Bright light. And then I hear almost like a whisper, Virginia, Virginia, and I think it was in my head that they were calling me, so they knew my name or they knew how to call me in my head, so it was like my name was being called. And I realized that ever since I was a little kid I had this memory of being, it must have happened the first time, too. Of having my name called. Sometimes having my name called in my head. It's like I'm remembering somebody calling me. I don't ever confuse it that someone's actually calling me, except that, once in a while, I think that maybe somebody is thinking about me and I am hearing him call my name, but I don't have any confusions about what's outside and what's inside. But I heard them call my name like a whisper. Not that it was quiet. It wasn't outside, it was inside. Whispers, Virginia, Virginia. So I recognized the call. It was like somebody I knew, and I went over to it and I went inside. It was like there was a bright column of light. I don't remember whether I went upstairs or whether there was a lift. I think it was like a ramp that I walked up. No, it was like a conveyor belt ramp. I stood on it and it lifted, and there was a celebration. They were visiting because they were celebrating something. It was as though they had finished a research project and whatever the outcome was, whether to discover something, whether the research project or whatever, there was an accomplishment that they were very pleased about and very proud of, and they were celebrating. It was as though, you know, maybe he'd gotten a Nobel Prize for extraterrestrial biology, that kind of something or other. And he was. Everybody on the ship was happy. Everybody was. It seems there were more this time than the three. And there was someone who became the dear later, was like a younger person, more like my age. Or it had the feeling of being more like a contemporary, and it was a female feeling, like a friend. But I have that feeling about it, and yet the deer didn't have it. It's as though it were the same person, and yet when I think about the deer didn't necessarily feel like a female deer as opposed to a male deer. AC. Androgynous? VH? No. Maybe it was just a level we were communicating was one where you were oblivious to which sex it is. But there was definitely sort of a female friend on the ship, and also at least two of the original people who had been on the first trip. Maybe she was their daughter or their granddaughter or whatever. It seems like it was a relative that got to come along to meet me, and it was a party. They were celebrating and they said they wanted to share it with me because my research or their research was interesting. I have a twitch in my leg now, fat her scar. BH, their research used their visit with me, so they wanted to share it with me because my contributions had been really helpful for them. And so we were having a party and they were telling me about, they were having a hard time explaining to me why it was so exciting. Except that the older man who had done the research was really beside himself with excitement. As though he had accomplished something that he was really proud of. It was real one why neat. And, it had to do with research and it had to do with the study, but it seemed like its significance was greater. I mean, it was obviously very deep to him. It was something more than abstract research. It was something either that had changed their whole understanding of the way life is in different places. Mean, it was something of heavy, heavy significance to him on a deeper level than just what we think of as a research project. As I said, it had almost a religious quality the way he felt about the research that he was doing. It was like his own mission. Something that he wanted to prove or something that he wanted to discover, something that he wanted to accomplish with his research, and he had succeeded in doing that. And, I guess they wanted a sample of me to see how I was different. Because I told them I was grown up. I said, I'm a mature, you know, like I explained to them I've done all my growing now. When you saw me, I was a child, and I have done as much growing as I am going to do. And I guess they wanted to know how I was different. And I think they did take some blood from the inside of my nose. I think I told them about the last time and I think they didn't want to leave a mark on me. So I think that's what happened. They did do that. AC. Who did that? VH. Who did that? It wasn't him and it wasn't the woman, who, the girl, who was sort of my age. It was, oh, I think it was his sidekick from the original trip. They used the same instrument. It was like it had a handle that could just come out. It was like a touch on the inside. A sort of hum, you know, sort of like a, I'm searching for the right image that it looked like, that it will remind you of. It was a nice smooth texture. A microphone. Not the kind that is like an ice cream cone, but just, this is one of the small ones. A little one. Little hand mic. Right. But it was all smooth. It didn't have texture to it. It was like, I guess it didn't have a groove. It must have been, I think they use sonar energy. It must have been focused. I think it was sonar because it had a little hum like you held it and it would go and then that was all there was to it. And, since I remembered it happening the first time, I hardly even paid any attention to it. AC. Was it put into the left or right nostril? I've been going like this, touching the left nostril, so I think it must have been here. I wonder why I was so annoyed to find the blood on my blouse. The first time, I was glad to have a visible, physical evidence of it. The second time, it was just sort of annoying. So they did that, and it was just a party. There was a one-ot of talking and a good feeling, and they were playing, playing light inside. There were lights flickering on. AC. Were there any refreshments? VH. I was trying to remember seeing if they had any refreshments, and I don't think they were able to give me anything. I don't think that they had anything that they gave me. I think they were playing music, too. And I think their music is more like what we think is like electronic, but not piercing and jarring. It was patterned, highly sophisticated, stylized and patterned. It was sounds that remind you of the sound of the wind going through the valley, for they were, you know, they were mellow sounds. They weren't piercing sounds or cacophonous or anything. And, there was some sound. It was like, it was quiet in the background because everybody was busy talking. They were talking to themselves, too. They were thinking at me, but they were talking to themselves and that had a sound. It was a little clicky, a little, it was like a voice was speaking, but a little bit more like smacking. You know, like, she smacks her palms, some of that stuff in it, in the talking. And at a higher pitch than we talk. More like, a pitch up here somewhere, she raises the pitch of her voice, somewhere up here, that kind of pitch. But I could hear it. And they were obviously excited. And they were trying to explain to me what they had accomplished, too. Chuckles, it seems as though they, I don't think they put it that way, but I think they succeeded into talking somebody into considering us as an endangered species, more chuckles, or something equivalent to that. Not endangered. No, I guess it wouldn't be that. It was like a precious species, kind of a classification. But it was more than that, too. It didn't have so much just to do with Earth, it had to do with, I guess maybe establishing the principle of non-interference, something like that. One of those things people like to deal with in science fiction themes. The kind of moral code they like to imagine intergalactic travelers have about not mucking up or interfering with indigenous cultures. AC, can you focus on the woman now? What was she like? Well, she looked like them. Except it seems to me she was a lighter color. It's as though the older you got the darker, gray you were. But it could be, as I said, they were wearing these things dash. Think they were their protective costumes and it might have just been that. The more senior you were, the darker it was. It might have been that. It seemed like hers was lighter, more creamy, colored. And it just felt like a younger person. Like a bouncy equality. It wasn't so deliberate, the way they expressed themselves. Hers was more bubbly, more bouncy. And, she wanted to hear about, you know, what the place, Earth, BH, was like. She hadn't been there and it was obviously a big treat for her to be there. I don't think she was really my age, but I think that, whatever she was, it was analogous to being my age. Then she was trying to tell me about the kinds of schools she went to. She was still a schoolgirl or whatever, how long it takes them to get through school. And, I guess they have a mating process, too, because it was as though she was trying to explain about dating or whatever they do according to what would be analogous, what they do in their spare time. We were trying to discuss what young people do in their spare time. And, she wanted to be a bioanthropologist like her father or grandfather, whoever he was. She was interested in that field. It was as though it was a very big deal for her to be the seeing me. Brief interruption while the tape is changed. I think that the blood sample was, she was going to have a chance to examine it, study it, too. It was, you know, sort of like collecting moon rocks, she'd get a piece of it. Maybe they took a tissue sample. I don't know. Interesting. So she was really excited about that. It's sort of like my souvenir for her, and there were more people along. And some of them were more junior to him, considerably, and they kept quiet. It was like they stood respectfully off a little bit, but they were very, it was sort of like the whole thing was very awesome to them. It wasn't so much that they were considered lowly creatures as that they were just standing the kind of being awed, you know, seeing a strange person and being at the party. The whole thing was really, a heavy trip for them. Well, over an hour and a half had passed since Virginia entered the trance state. I signaled Dr. Claymar and, within a few moments, we ended what had been, for all three of us, an extraordinary session. As the reader must know by now, the UFO phenomenon is fraught with disturbingly bizarre, even absurd accounts. The trouble is that, embedded within this mass of nearly unbelievable material, there is a core of solid detail which we find repeated time and time again. The overall shape of Virginia's scenario does not differ in any basic way from the other abduction accounts we have been examining. Despite its science fiction aspects, Virginia's narrative is supported by internal evidence. First, there is the detail of the blood on her blouse. Its presence is confirmed by her FAMI-1Y, and it was even recorded on film. The blood was the result of a probe of some kind inserted into her left nostril to take blood and tissue samples. In another case, Betty Andreessen IV was abducted in 1967, though the encounter was not investigated for a decade. Under hypnosis, Betty recalled being on the examining table, BA, I feel shaky. He's taking an instrument and, wow. Deep fast breathing, why do you have to put that up my nose? Oh. He's putting that thing in my nose, and it's going up and it's breaking through something. I don't like it. Oh, and I can't move. It's hurting. He had that thing up in my head. Sandy Larson, abducted in August of 1975, described her ordeal. In a hypnotic trance, she revealed what happened inside the UFO. Sandy Larson, it was like somebody took the knife and made the inside of my nose sore. Q. Made the inside of your nose sore? Sandy Larson, scraped it. Q. Did you see anybody touching your nose? Sandy Larson, huh? Q. Could you see hands? Sandy Larson, number Q. Could you see an instrument of some kind? Sandy Larson, yeah? Q. Can you describe it? Sandy Larson, I would say like a little knife or like a cotton swab. Q. Not very big, but something that was placed inside your nose? Sandy Larson, huh? A cotton swab, of course, is round, while a knife is thin and flat. Though a volumetric object is not necessarily implied by her description, what is called the mind is a small, elongated instrument of some kind, and the pain that she associated with it. Virginia made a drawing of the thin, hand microphone type of object she recalled being placed in her nostril, and it is compared in figure 14, to a similar drawing made by Andreessen. We are dealing here, I believe, not with three women's magical fantasies, but rather with three memories of what may well have been an identical medical instrument, and an identical unpleasant operation. The conversation that Virginia reported from her first 1950 abduction has many parallels. She was asked about the lifespan of humans and various animals. She was shown star maps which apparently were color-coded, and which were like slides, you know, like windows. This last detail, to me, is a six-year-old child's attempt to suggest the effect of a holograph, since a window encloses a three-dimensional space rather than framing a flat surface. Betty Hill, in her 1961 abduction, also was shown what was apparently a three-dimensional, holograph-like star map. She, too, was questioned about astronomy and had very little more information on the subject than had Virginia. I asked where he was from, because I knew he wasn't from the Earth, and I wanted to know where he came from. And he asked me if I knew anything about the universe. He said he wished I knew more about this, and I said, I wish I did, too. He said, if you don't know where you are, on the star map, BH, then there isn't any point of my telling where I am from. Betty Hill also was asked about life, spans and her conception of time, though some questions were more specific and less philosophical. in an interrogation that again suggests to me more intelligence, testing on information, gathering, Betty continues, so then he asked me, well, what did we eat? And I said, we ate meat, potatoes, vegetables, milk. And so he asked me, what are vegetables? And I said that this is a broad term and could cover a great variety of certain kinds of foods we eat. But I couldn't just explain what vegetables are, there were too many. And he said was the one kind I liked. I said that I ate a great many, but my favorite is squash. So he said, tell me about squash. So I said it was yellow, usually, in color. And he said, what is ye how? One thinks of little 6-year old Virginia trying to describe to her abductors what plants eat, and explaining that they eat nothing, they simply exist in the air. The ease one has following Virginia's account is hampered somewhat by its 3 different levels of discourse. In the beginning, she speaks much of the time as a little girl who is not quite 7 years old, and her locutions are often charmingly childlike, my friend on the ship, the cute lizards, the soft fuzzies like rodents and bunnies. But later on, as she recalls the French episode, her phrasing is frequently that of a 60s teenager, the party on board is really neat. She scolds her brother for being thick. The female tried to explain about dating, and the celebration was really a heavy trip. A third level in her hypnotic account is the present, day, 35-year. Old Virginia's use of contemporary language. She frequently speculates upon what she is recalling, so the reader must carefully separate objective memory from after, there, fact interpretation. This latter problem exists in almost all one hypnotic recall, but is particularly obtrusive here, since Virginia has a sharply inquiring and speculative mind. Her apparent lack of fear during both experiences allows her a little imaginative elbow room. It is as if she were sitting in a sparsely filled theater near an exit, noticing wisps of smoke, and having plenty of time on the way out to wonder what is going on and why, this as opposed to being suddenly caught up in panic. A close reading of the transcript reveals the differences between memory and speculation. Virginia carefully says that her account of the leader's research mission is more the feeling that I have now when I try to think back about how I felt, rather than necessarily something that I was aware of then. She states as an accurate memory the fact that the inside of the UFO was very bright, and then adds that maybe the light there was from a different spectrum. She recalls that her eyes were quite dry and irritated, but then speculates that maybe they didn't humidify the atmosphere. Maybe they just put in plain oxygen or nitrogen, but it was very dry. The instrument inserted in her nostril had a little hum, like you held it and it would go and that was all there was to it. But then she cannot resist guessing about a power source, and adds that it must operate by sonar energy. When she describes her idea of the accomplishments that are being celebrated, her language clearly implies a guess, an approximation that is metaphorical rather than literal. They were having a hard time explaining to me why it was so exciting. It was as though, you know, maybe like he'd gotten a Nobel Prize for extraterrestrial biology, that sort of something or other. Obviously, what is most reliable in Virginia's account is what she presents as specific, objective recollection. Less reliable is what she frankly presents as honest, after, there, fact speculation. Being a lucid and verbal woman, Virginia searches for images and useful metaphors to flesh out the tone of particular memories. Taking an overview of the Alsatian episode in the light of other abduction cases we know, and treating it as a transaction between Virginia and her captors. This is what one sees: an adolescent girl who had been abducted 10 years earlier is somehow lured away from her family and into the woods. Telepathically, she is called by name. She goes towards the landed UFO and is taken inside. She is made to feel happy, part of a celebration in her honor, but the main event is like the former. Virginia provides the gift. Blood and tissue samples are extracted from inside her nose. She is then taken into the woods and given post-hypnotic suggestions that she will forget everything except the fact that she saw a beautiful deer. She returns to her family only to discover that an odd time lapse has occurred, and that there is fresh blood on her blouse.